Text 43. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Snatvanusavanam tasmin.
Snatvanusavanam tasmin.
Kalindya salile shive.
Kalindya salile shive.
Kalindya. Krithvo chitani nirvasan.
Krithvo chitani nirvasan.
Atmana kalpita sanaha. Snatvanu sadvanatnam tasmin.
Snatvanu sadvanam tasmin.
Kalindya salile shive.
Kalindya salile shive.
Krithvo chitani nirvasan. Atmana kalpita sanaha. Snatva. After taking bath. Anusavanam. Three times. Tasmin. In that. Kalindya. In the river Kalindi. The Jamuna. Sanide, in the water. Shive, which is very auspicious. Kritva, performing. Uchitani, suitable. Nivasan, sitting. Atmanaha, of the self. Kalpita asanaha, having prepared a sitting place. Translation. Narada Muni instructed my dear boy in the waters of the river Jamuna, which is known as Kalindi, you should take three baths daily because the water is very auspicious, sacred, and clear. After bathing, you should perform the necessary regulative principles for Ashtanga Yoga and then sit down on your asana, sitting place, in a calm and quiet position. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It appears from this statement that Dhruva Maharaj had already been instructed how to practice the Eightfold Yoga System, which is known as Ashtanga Yoga. This system is explained in our Bhagavad Gita as it is, in the chapter entitled Sankhya Yoga, pages 319 to 322, unless the numbering system has changed. It is understood that in Ashtanga Yoga, one practices settling the mind and then concentrating it on the form of Vishnu, as will be described in the following verses. It is clearly stated here that Ashtanga Yoga is not a bodily gymnastic exercise, but a practice to concentrate the mind on the form of Vishnu before sitting on his asana, which is also described in Bhagavad Gita. One has to cleanse himself very nicely in clear and sacred water thrice daily. The water of the river Jamuna is naturally very clear and pure, at least it used to be. And thus, if anyone bathes there three times, undoubtedly he will be very greatly purified externally. Narada Muni therefore instructed Dhruva Maharaj to go to the bank of the Jamuna and thus become externally purified. This is part of the gradual process of practicing mystic yoga. I'm going to read the next verse also, text 44. Pranayamena trivritta. After sitting on your seat, practice the three kinds of breathing exercises, and thus gradually control the life air, the mind, and the senses. Completely free yourself from all material contamination, and with great patience, begin to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. In this verse, the entire yoga system is described in summary, and special stress is given to the breathing exercises for stopping the disturbing mind. The mind, by nature, is always oscillating, for it is very fickle. But the breathing exercise is meant to control it. The process of controlling the mind might have been very possible in those days, millions of years ago, when Dhruva Maharaj took to it. But at the present moment, the mind has to be fixed directly on the lotus feet of the Lord by the chanting process. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one immediately concentrates on the sound, vibration, and thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord, and very quickly one is elevated to the position of samadhi, in case you haven't noticed. Or trance. If one goes on chanting the holy name of the Lord, holy names of the Lord, which are not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, naturally his mind becomes absorbed in thought of the Lord. Paragraph. It is recommended here to Dhruva Maharaj that he meditate on the Supreme Guru, the Supreme Spiritual Master. The Supreme Spiritual Master is Krishna, who is therefore known as Chaitya Guru. This refers to the Supersoul who is sitting in everyone's heart. He helps from within, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, and he sends the Spiritual Master who helps from without. The Spiritual Master is the external manifestation of the Chaitya Guru, or the Spiritual Master sitting in everyone's heart. Final paragraph. The process by which we give up our thoughts of material things is called pratyahara, which entails being freed from all material thoughts and engagements. The word abhidhyayat in text 44, abhidhyayat, is used in this verse. It indicates that unless one's mind is fixed, one cannot meditate. The conclusion, therefore, is that meditating means thinking of the Lord within. Whenever one comes to that stage of the Ashtanga Yoga system, or by the method recommended in the Shastra specifically for the present age, to constantly chant the holy name of the Lord, the goal is to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Apparently, even all classes of cultured persons within Vedic culture learn these basic systems of yoga. We know, for example, even in the following two ages later, when Dhritarashtra was instructed by Vidura to leave home after his whole plan of usurping the kingdom for the Pandava, for the Kauravas, was spoiled by Krishna. And he's in his final stages of life, and which with a lot of prying, he left the royal palace along with Draupadi. He also knew the Ashtanga Yoga system. So capable was he in the Ashtanga Yoga system that just by his will, his body ignited. Pretty intense concentration. And that's two yugas later. So this is the very beginning of Satya Yuga, the beginning of the reign of Swayambhuva Manu. And so in Satya Yuga, the process of meditation was recommended, but we're hearing specifically the process of meditation wasn't the modern kind of meditation, like emptying the mind of thought and becoming in a state of nirvana. It was meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, it led to bhakti, just like in the third canto Bhagavatam, Kapila Dev teaching the process of Sankhya Yoga to Devahuti. He similarly describes a process of meditation, as we're hearing here. This is one generation later, because along with the sons of Swayambhuva Manu, there were daughters of Swayambhuva Manu, and Kapila Dev is like, you know, Kapila Dev and Dhruva are cousins, because they're the the mother of Kapila Dev and the father of Dhruva were brother and sister. And the process was meditation. Dhyayate Kritaya. And Krita Yuga or Satya Yuga are interchangeable. In the Padma Purana, it uses Krita Yuga. Commonly, Prabhupada used Satya Yuga. Mean the same thing. They refer to the same period of time where dhyayate, dhyana, by the process of meditation, is recommended. And in that process of meditation, after the mind becomes controlled in meditation, it becomes directed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. And in that state of completely fixing upon Lord Vishnu, the further development is that one engages in devotional service on the spiritual platform in meditation upon Lord Vishnu. That's pretty elevated. But we have a nice example of that in Nectar of Devotion, where one brahmana was engaged in the process of deity worship, and as he became older, his senses weren't working the same way when they were younger. And so he engaged in deity worship within the mind. In the long description of how he would go and gather the best of ingredients for cooking and the best of flowers for decorating his deity and ornaments for his deity. And it's like we have a pujari in New York, Sharp Bihari. Next time you go to New York, you can ask Sharp Bihari, can I see your drawings of deity dress designs? And he has, I don't know if he still has them, he showed me once like 50 different designs. You know, like a designer might make fashion designs to make money and become famous, and he makes nice fashions. exposing different parts of the body in very interesting ways. So he had these elaborate, you know, this style, that Victorian style, Oriental style, European, French style, Spanish style, you know, beautiful, detailed meditation completely. He dresses the small Radhakrishna deities. Completely absorbed. And those of you that are brahmanas can sometime go into the room where he does the deity dressing. It's like, it's there, it's a palace in there. Because he takes them from the altar and it's their room. It's Radhakrishna's room. And anyway, it's that he's absorbed. His mind is absorbed in Radha Krishna. Quietly. He's not like go flashing it around, but that's his absorption in a very, very nice and very personal way. So I'm sure pujaris here in a similar way, in their own manner. You worship the deity not just like, you know, a duty, but you become attached to the deity, and the deity becomes attached to you, and there's this nice relationship, and you want to see nice in the mind. It's described in Nectar Devotion. There's the regulative part, and there's the being generous, the spontaneous, where one's mind contemplates how to serve the deity very nicely. Like, you know, how to observe, understand this is the 40th anniversary year of this temple and the deities being here, so there's meditation on. And it's not, you know, the other, just so lots of people come and we have a big party and there's, you know, lots of donations at the end. It's in the contemplation, the devotional contemplation is how to have such a nice festival that the deities are very pleased. And the worshippers of the deity become very pleased. And the outcome is sure to be wonderful, because if Krishna is pleased just by that effort, Prabhupada describes this in Bhagavad Gita, one of the best, or the best way to fix the mind upon Krishna is to contemplate ways to propagate, to spread the Hare Krishna movement. And even if one doesn't get to do them, like, you know, all those dresses that Sharpihari designed, I don't know if one of them was made, but the spiritual credit is the meditation. Of course, it's nice to also execute, but you know, he doesn't make the orders with the dressmakers in India. Somebody else does that. But in his relationship with Krishna, it's complete by that meditation. Or we also, you know, contemplate having a nice festival, or having increasing book distribution, contemplating how to do that. Of course, it's nice to bring inspirational ideas into the world of action. And some persons are more expert at that, and some persons are less. But anyway, the goal, the fruit, is absorption in thought of Krishna. But we also want to engage our senses in service to Krishna, both. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. Not just always think of me, or just perform your prescribed duty, think of whatever you like. The mind and the senses need to be connected in a proper way. And that's the fruit. So there's vidhis, there's rules and regulations, and the rules and regulations for our present process differ, from Satya Yuga, but the principles are the same. So one of the principles is cleanliness, external cleanliness. In this case, the river Jamuna. Very nice. Narada is giving, by his words, he's giving residence in Vrindavan to Dhruva Maharaj. How wonderful. Just like Raghunath Das Goswami, he received from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a Govardhan Shiva that he was personally worshipping in a very ecstatic way and mood, and a string of gunja berries. They're little red berries that grow abundantly in Vrindavan. And Raghunath immediately took it correctly, that by this gesture, Lord Chaitanya was giving him, granting him residence at Govardhan Hill, and giving him the mercy of Srimati Radharani, who decorates Govardhan when Govardhan worship is done. The string garland of gunja berries is common, indicating Radha's gracing the beautiful form of Govardhan. He took it that way, and similarly Narada Muni is granting that just by his words, residence in Vrindavan, in the forest of Vrindavan by the banks of the river Jamuna, because it's very sacred to do spiritual activity in a sacred place. It's the potency is greatly enriched. Of course, that doesn't mean, you know, all of our temples throughout the ISKCON world should just close up and everybody got on a plane and go to Vrindavan, because it's a sacred place. Rather, the sacred place elsewhere is established by the very activities that we're engaged in. Those places become places of pilgrimage by the hearing and chanting and worshipping activity, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, and our acharyas repeatedly stress on that. At the same time, back again the other side, it's very special to be in Vrindavan and bathe in the river Jamuna, because even if the water has got factory, you know, whatever you call that stuff, junk in it, the river Jamuna is nonetheless sacred. So, at that time there weren't factories, and so the river Jamuna was very nice. And by taking bath three times daily, not only would refresh the body and make the body clean, but also sanctify and purify by taking that bath. And then sitting on a proper seat, and as mentioned specifically, there are preliminaries that are to be done in the performance of the Ashtanga yoga system to help get everything, a proper alignment of body and mind, and then the asanas, and then pranayama, and then pratyahara, and then dhyana. It's, as Prabhupada says, this is summarizing the process. Yama, niyama, asana, pranayama. Pranayama is for controlling the prana, the life air, coming and going within the body, circulating within the body. And by so doing, the mind becomes more peaceful. That's nice. Mind becoming more peaceful is always welcome. It's a mechanical process, not directly a devotional process. And Prabhupada's comment here is This process of controlling the mind might have been very possible in those days, millions of years ago, when Dhruva Maharaj took to it. But at the present moment, the mind has to be fixed directly. So sometimes there is, you know, importing of the pranayama method into the process of chanting. Some persons think that's a nice thing to do. Prabhupada never taught us to do that. Here's what Prabhupada's teaching us. It doesn't mean that's bad, but it's not something that Prabhupada gave us, and I like staying with things that Prabhupada gave us. It's, he didn't like shortchange us. He gave us what we needed, and most effective. So anyway, making the mind peaceful. Then the pratyahara process is withdrawing the senses, the subtle senses, from the sense objects. That is, there is the mind, so making the mind still and peaceful, and then withdrawing the senses. The consciousness of the soul, which is situated within the region of the heart, is extending out through the senses, the knowledge-acquiring senses. And then the working senses, detecting something out there in the field of the material energy that will fulfill the I want to enjoy program, then the senses go after it for fulfilling desires to enjoy. So pratyahara is to withdraw that very deliberately. The subtle senses are consolidated. Something like the example of Bhagavad Gita, of the tortoise that extends and withdraws the senses. But that commonly refers to the working senses. If there's something that can be done, I can extend my senses in Krishna's service. And if it's not Krishna's service, the senses are withdrawn, like the tortoise withdraws his limbs within his shell. Because it has nothing to do with service. But service, so that's the working senses, but the knowledge-acquiring senses, or the sense of contact with objects, that consciousness is withdrawn in the pratyahara process. So one is very consolidated or compact. The common disturbances of contemplation of objects of the senses is withdrawn. That's very peaceful. You don't have to think about thinking about an object of the sense. That mind then needs to be directed somewhere, because mind is oscillating. He uses the word here, chanchala, flickering. So the mind then needs to be, by meditation process, directed somewhere. If you're pulling this back, consciousness needs to go somewhere. And dhyan, meditation, fixing the mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's what he says in text 44. Completely free yourself from all material contamination, and with great patience begin to meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Notice it says with great patience. So, Bhishma Dev is another nice example. He was a mystic. He was a great devotee, but he also was a mystic. And when it came time, he was having his presentation on his bed of arrows, explaining to Yudhisthira Maharaja how, as the emperor of the world, he should exercise his duties as king. When he saw that the sun was rising, Makara Sankranti is when the sun starts moving in a northerly direction. He then finished his Bhagavatam class and withdrew his working senses, withdrew his subtle senses, and became fixed in meditation, just like he was quite practiced. So for devotional service, his senses were being extended, both the working senses, knowledge-acquiring senses. Now, because it was time to leave his body, he followed this Ashtanga Yoga system and consolidated his subtle and working senses. So that's essentially what's being instructed to Dhruva Maharaj. And we're going to hear some other things that was recommended for him to do. But even it's Satya Yuga, he's given a mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And that's where the, you know, where our processes connect very nicely. We're also given Mahamantra to chant. And by the chanting of Mahamantra, especially when there's this alignment, it gives spiritual strength to make that alignment possible without the mechanical process if we follow in devotion the vittis of sadhana bhakti. So what Rupa Goswami has given us is different because it's a different yuga than what Narada is giving to Dhruva. So we don't have to go and practice what Narada is giving to Dhruva. We need to practice what Rupa Goswami gave. And so we have Nectar of Devotion by Srila Prabhupada's grace, a summary study that makes it easy to go through Nectar of Devotion, how to perform devotional service, what are the vidhis, the regulations of sadhana bhakti. And essentially, they do the same thing as what Narada was doing. Narada was having Dhruva do. It's, you know, it's mercy, because we didn't have to stand on one leg and take a breath of air every couple of weeks. And, you know, before that, eat fallen leaves from the ground for a couple of months, once a day, etc. We'll hear his austerities. They're beyond our capacity. We crumble. We wouldn't make it that far. So it's suitable for our age. Remember in New Jersey temple, there was one man that would come before the deity, and he'd stand before the deity like Dhruva Maharaj. You know, it wasn't just a kid, it was an adult who had kids. Stand on one foot. You know, very carefully places, you know, his one foot to, by his knee, and stand there, wobble a bit. That's called imitation. Not following. And similarly, we shouldn't try to imitate Haridas Thakur or Rupa Goswami or such personalities, but there are instructions that they've given, and we follow those instructions and see by their example how to best apply this in our lives. And then we'll make nice advancement. And you can stand on two legs, it's okay. And you can breathe, it's okay. And you can take prasadam. Sufficient to maintain body and soul together, that's okay. And chant Hare Krishna very nicely. Okay, any comments or questions on the verse? Jitendriya.
You're talking about the rivers. Just recently in Time Magazine, there's a rather large article about the pollution is just becoming so overwhelming that barely sustain itself, mostly pollution coming from Delhi. It's a pretty eye-opening article. But
didn't see the article, but I'm familiar with the pollution. Someone else? Yes? Well, I'll give a simple answer. We should be serious in a sustainable way. In other words, the Utsaha Mayi program is not sustainable. It's Mayi means illusory or false. False enthusiasm or seriousness. So that's common, that happens. But it's, you know, after some time, it wanes. So, what's needed is to sustain something is not only, okay, this is a realistic level for me, but also behind that is a desire, I want to go to the real standard. The Dhruva Maharaj standard, or the Rupa Goswami standard. That's not, I'm not there. So, but I want to go there. So that's important. Behind the level that I maintain. So the things that I given, if assuming that's a given, there are things that I need to do to help me stay on that standard so that I can go the next step. Proper association, proper following, proper regard, avoiding offenses, and so on. It's very helpful to have a role model. And, you know, even your spiritual master, and as he has done so wonderfully, describe our Vaishnava acharyas in ways that, you know, they're wonderful role models. So, becoming inspired by their example, there's very strong impetus to. Or as we're hearing about Dhruva Maharaj, wow. And the Sringa Chaturdasi every year we hear Lord Sringadev and Prahlad Maharaj, wow. So we have lots of opportunity to sustain, to like give impetus to keep that, try to go forward the next step, impetus as a reminder and take it. The short of what I'm saying is an incrementalist approach is sustainable. But there has to be a desire to continue to go forward. And that's what's required. That level of seriousness. And that level of seriousness, it's implicit. There are certain things that we have to must give up. If we don't give up certain things as we go along, we won't go forward. The level of seriousness will not enter. It's exactly like, you know, Dhruva. Your words don't enter my heart. Because he was holding on to something. Still, he got mercy. More on this? You okay? Okay. Anyone else? Yeah?
Um, You're talking about the implementalist approach. So there's an ongoing need to understand our capacity, physical capacity, and emotional competence. That can increase with our purification and all that. But maybe I haven't answered the question, but what's, in your opinion, the best way to approach understanding physical capacity? Because there's a trial and error method, which is not necessarily the most intelligent, but just in my experience. And, but then there's also a lot of opportunity and requirement for service.
We have to use our intelligence, and in the course of using intelligence, it eliminates the error part of trial and error, or reduces it, at least. We have those that are guiding us. That's a great, great resource that we should access. And third thing is that the trial and error is one way to describe, but it's also not exactly error. It's a matter of learning, meaning when you started your deity worship, it was like, whoa, add that into the envelope. It's like the envelope is really full. I don't know if I can. And you hunker down, okay, I'll try it. And you go along for a while, it's okay, and then, whoa, it feels really full. So that may have something to do with beyond limitation. It also may have something to do with becoming casual and sloppy and careless. And, you know, if that's within one's, you know, then one has to apply intelligence and take guidance. Because maybe it's just being sloppy, and this is a good opportunity to not be sloppy and careless and casual. Well, can I sustain, do I need that sloppiness and casualness and, you know, wasting time, space, just because, you know, I like it? Or, no, I don't want that to be in my life, and this is a very good opportunity to let me renew my commitment. So it's, you know, the self-appraisal is something that's required along with guidance. And then it's not just trial and error, it's purification. We can be advised or even encouraged to accept some additional service or some higher standard or something. All of that is necessary and very good. There's an operative principle that's our willingness also, our commitment. And without that, all good advice and, you know, great opportunity isn't going to go anywhere. So that self-examination is, am I ready to make that commitment to my relationship with Krishna and disconnect further from, you know, the material comfort zone, so-called comfort zone. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.